McLean. Dick Coach's Corner. You're listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plymer. For someone to explain. Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode number 43 of the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plymer, and joining me today is Russell Earnshaw. Russell is an international performance coach who is currently involved with the England Under-18 program and works with the RFU, providing support to coaches throughout England. Russell also coached England Sevens for 7 years and had a playing career with Bath, where they won the 1998 European Cup, and he also represented England in Sevens at the 1999 Com Games. On top of that, he taught economics at Eastbourne College for 2 years, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show, so welcome, Russell.
Hey, Andy, all right? You're definitely making me feel very old. Thanks for that.
No worries.
No, you've racked up some good experience there, and how did your coaching journey start? When did you first get into it, and what were some of those early experiences like?
Well, you'd probably have to ask the players; they probably weren't very good. Their coaching experiences from me.
Yeah.
I played up at Doncaster. We had a coach that was sacked, and so I think a group of us as players started to kind of do a bit of the coaching. Mm-hmm. We probably were doing a fair bit anyway. I was definitely kind of at that level. I was a leader as a player, and then we moved due to family reasons. And Ben Ryan, who's obviously done wonders at Fiji, and invited me to come and do some stuff with England with the Sevens, and at the same time, I started player coaching at another club team, Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And I've made about a million mistakes, and I'm still making them regularly. And yeah. Yeah, I guess still on a fairly long coaching journey now.
Yeah, right. And I think that's actually how I started my coaching, was as a player coach, and probably similar experiences too, where probably not the greatest fun for some of the players. How did you find that player coach role?
Tricky.
Yeah.
Look back at it now, and your judgment severely clouded, I think, mm-hmm. when you're there at the same time. A lot of friends who are doing similar stuff now, and just chatting to them, and they find it pretty tricky as well. It's hard to take a step back. It's often hard to be objective when you're in the middle of the pitch, and emotions are what they are. There'd definitely be a lot of things I would have done differently. Mm-hmm. However, that's what learning looks like.
Yeah, so exactly.
You're kind of a product of all those experiences, really.
Yeah, and I think I had some really positive experiences, but some trying experiences too. But I think it may have even expedited the learning process a bit more. Depends what kind of person you are, I think. But, you know, it took me about a year and a half being a player coach to have my first interaction with a sports psychologist, because I needed the help to separate the playing and the coaching, and then that took me down a whole path of, you know, coaching pedagogy and all those kind of things. So, yeah, I think there's some pluses there too.
I made mine sound worse than it was. We had some pretty good experiences, and I definitely learned some positive lessons about things I was doing well. I think the challenge is, how do you influence people when you aren't on the pitch? Mm. So I think it's easier to do that when you're a player coach. And then you've got to think, and some of that might be, you know, interdisciplinary stuff as well. So, it's been a cool part of the journey, I would say.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, starting generally, what do you think the role of the coach looks like?
Oh, wow, that's a big question.
It's broad.
Yeah, it's cool. Look, the environment I'm currently working in, so with the England Under-18s, stuff, it's we're really kind of supporting their learning, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Around, you know, there'll be a fair amount of exploration going on there, and we now just starting to get into playing some competitive fixtures where they have the opportunity to kind of put that stuff out on the pitch. I see my role as supporting them, but also challenging, surprising, stretching them, sometimes mm-hmm. disturbing them, provoking their thinking, in order that they can be the best person and player they can be, really. So I don't think they'll I hope they wouldn't say that they find it really comfortable. I think they would find it they would, some players would be very agitated by me, but I take that as a positive. Their language, they speak to us about us setting them frustrating challenges and about having opportunities to make cool mistakes, i.e. mistakes they learn from. So I think our role really is just to set a really good learning environment where people feel safe and have opportunities to learn and to make mistakes and to explore. And we just kind of help guide them along the way there, really.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And what, at that, you mentioned that developmental level, and we'll go into the England U18 stuff later on for sure. What do you think sessions should look like at that developmental level? Like if someone came along and watched you coach tomorrow and you're working with those U18 guys, what's some of the things they're going to see?
I'd like to think, it would be different for each kid, really. So certainly our goal is that whilst you might have this session going on, it would be coached big picture. So we would coach through the principles of play. So in attack, what's the best place to go forward? But within that, we would have maybe some kind of rewards or constraints or some individual challenges for players and for coaches, where it would just be different for everyone. So we've, my view is we've got this game going on, and within it, well, little Johnny, who's currently three stone heavier than everyone else and running over people, well, if he gets touched, it's a turnover. And Steve, who stands on the wing and has been told by someone he's a winger, well, actually, he's getting double points if he can assist people with scoring tries.
That's
my view, is that, and that's, you know, and beyond that, well, it would look messy. I like to think it would look like the game. So it'd be a lot of transition. There wouldn't be huge amounts of stoppages. We would give players opportunities to self-organize and to solve problems themselves. It's something, you know, it's definitely somewhere we want to get to, that we can, you know, in the moment we can adapt and we can tactically solve problems. So lots of little challenges. You'd see that one team would probably have some information that the other team's trying to work out. So it might be that one team's defending a certain way and the other team is trying to work that out. It would just look messy with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, well, I saw a great, I tweeted it out actually, and you I think you liked it. It was a video that through the Saracens website, their development stuff, the 360 rugby that you're playing. Was that with the Saracens Academy, or was that with the England U18 group, or?
That was with the it was some of the Saracens DPP group, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
We would, I think might have been that session where we would start with some 360 stuff, simply to really get them to scan and to look for space.
Often,
when we play the two-dimensional version of the game, where then people aren't really looking so much for space, they start to get into shape, they start to get into structure, they often stop looking in front of them and start looking around them and organizing themselves relative to other attackers rather than based upon the pictures the defense is giving them.
Yeah, and I'll put that link in the show notes, because I gave you the greatest compliment. I stole it and have palmed it off as being my own session with any practice that I've done since then. But I really like the way you included the principles of play in there, and like you said, you could individualize that really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, the principles are interesting. I went to a conference the other week, and there's a guy who's the academy manager at Luton Town Football Club, and he just said, look, I was okay as a player. Mm-hmm. However, if the players turn out to be as good as me, then we're in a lot of trouble because I just wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. And so where I think the principles fit in is if we give the kids big picture outcomes, you know, what's the best way to go forward, then they can just fill in the blanks. And we might need to support them sometimes. However, the kids that I'm currently coaching are way more skillful than I ever was. Mm. They can do stuff that I could have only dreamed of doing. So if I spend my time trying to make them be me, then we won't go and win World Cups. We won't go and have world-class. We'll just have players that were like me, which will be disappointing for us.
Yeah, and you do some stuff with you like a lot of player ownership at that level, and you do some stuff with cards and principles of play. What can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so we would coach with principles of play. That would be our kind of our structure, our framework, I guess. And beneath that, we looked at some of the skills that are necessary to help support the players with the principles of play. So creativity was C. So that's really, in simple language, that's about having different solutions to problems. So that might mean that every single player, 1 to 15, can run, kick or pass. Mm-hmm. Often, if you've got a really low number, you're told you're not allowed to kick. Mm. A would be awareness. So that would be, in other people's language, they might talk about game understanding or game sense, rugby IQ, and that's just really about your understanding of the game. R would be resilience, so it's about handling pressure. So that would be often time or space or, you know, from playing in a big occasion. So some work we would do around that. D would be decision making. Ultimately, top end of the game, it's, you know, ask Johnny, 2003 is a pretty good decision to go for that drop goal. That's the kind of stuff that wins.
Some may disagree.
Yeah, sorry about that. And S is self-organization. And we really want a group of players that can solve problems on their own in the moment. lots of stuff I observe would be coaches solving problems after something's happened rather than allowing the players the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So you use that acronym as more of a kind of set of guidelines that you kind of want to expose your players to all those kind of situations, not necessarily all at once, but give them opportunities to experiment with those.
Yeah, we would. I mean, and for us, it's definitely transformed my coaching because actually gives you kind of something to hang your hat on. And we would be reviewing, planning our sessions based around, well, how have we developed awareness in these players? How have we supported them with their resilience? How have we challenged their decision making? And for us as coaches, that's what we coach. We coach principles of play and we would coach cards.
Oh, great.
And it is interesting because then you start to peel back the layers as you're working with other coaches on, you know, what are you coaching? Why do you coach? And often people don't really have something to hang their hat on. So it makes it quite challenging.
Okay, great. Well, sticking with the developmental side of the game, not necessarily our game, but what sports out there are doing some really good stuff other than rugby in the developmental kind of coalface that we could learn from as coaches?
Yeah, we do. We do quite a bit of stuff with other sports and sharing. So we've looked at ECB, so cricket over here. They're doing some good stuff. Mo Babat's doing some good stuff around talent ID. And so we've definitely learned some lessons from that in terms of one of his phrases is many eyes, many times. So perhaps looking more independently and on more occasions and in different contexts at players. Christian Speakman's doing some really interesting stuff around. He's at Birmingham City Academy. They're probably a little bit different to some of the other academies in terms of, I think they get that being a 12-year-old kid, you probably want to be spending time with your mate.
Yeah.
Actually, they also were with us, understand the importance of education. So whereas a lot of academies will take it to school, they have one day a week in the club, which is, I think, over the years, about 15% of their school time, which compared to others, significant. So it's always good to see people who are like-minded in terms of understanding it like to be a 12-year-old kid and how important education is. We step out a little bit. We do stuff with Google. So one of my mates is a guy called Kirk Vallis. His internal job title is chief wizard. He's in charge of creativity at Google. And does that fit in with us? Well, some of the stuff around creativity and learning environments, but also I think as a he just has a really good ability to kind of nudge behavior. So being taking some of the stuff that some of the ideas he's used and putting them into rugby as well to maybe challenge coaches.
Awesome.
Yeah, lots of stuff. I mean, any opportunity. I went probably the funnest thing I've had, and it's once again, it's outside rugby. I went to the Brit School, so where Adele and, you know, people like, it's definitely the best learning environment I've been in. Wow. So some real good principles from there. It was really hard to tell who the teachers were.
Oh, that's cool. So
they were dressed like the kids. They were speaking the same language as the kids. Sometimes they weren't in the lessons, so the kids would run the lessons, and then at the end, the teacher would come in and just polish off the dancing. It was fun. There wasn't really any rules around dress code or bells, so it just felt a little bit informal, which for me is pretty cool as well. Brit School has been some good learning for me as well, to be honest.
Awesome. Okay, well, and lastly on development, what do you think rugby is going to look like in 10 years' time, and how, as coaches, do you think we need to best prepare our athletes for that game?
I mean, this is something we're also thinking a lot about. I was watching – the other day I watched the 2011 Under-20s Junior World Cup final, which had, I think, 9 All Blacks and 9 – England,
oh, amazing, yeah.
And even that game looks a bit different to the game now, and that's not that long ago. World Rugby's, you know, has a mission statement around the game and it being entertaining, and the reality is it's driven a lot by Southern Hemisphere. There, I would imagine there's going to be more ball movement. They want more ball in play. They want more tries. So they'll start to, as they have already, really, just manipulate the laws of the game, and in order to achieve that. So we go into Wellington Week next week, which is a really good week for the kids in the academy. So all the regional academies, under 16 level, they go to Wellington College and they play some games against each other. We run some coach development. It's basically like this, just an awesome week of rugby. And so we've adapted some of the rules for the under 16s. So, for example, you have 20 seconds to take a line out. I think you have 10 seconds to decide what you're going to do on a penalty. So as a result, there was more quick taps. Kick off, you have to kick off between the 10 and the 22. So you can't kick deep. So we've had more kicks to compete. Some of the offences that were previously penalties become free kicks. In your own 22, you can't kick out unless it bounces. So some of the play, I just posted some of it on the Magic Academy. There was one bit from Saracens against Bristol that was about 2.25 minutes long, and it was just end to end. Like, I would love to be playing that game if my would allow me, which it wouldn't.
No.
That's where we think the game's going. Now, granted that, certainly, in terms of an English point of view, we're never going to go away from our super strengths around first phase and around defence, strong defence, and that kind of relentlessness. I just think where we need to get better at is some of our attack stuff and being able to be a bit more comfortable in unstructured play.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, great. Well, moving on to your role with U18 England, more around the players, like how are the players identified for the initial group? Like you mentioned some of the ID work that Mo Babbitt's done, and you would have learned a bunch off that. What were some of the key areas that you and the coaches were focusing on to ID the players?
It starts a bit earlier. So within the academies, they would start at about under 13. They would be really big numbers at that stage. Lots of kids who aren't even necessarily at schools that do rugby. It's about potential. It's about running a program that's enjoyable, that's a really good experience, but also allows the players to develop. And then I guess over time, the numbers will be reduced, but we're still pretty big numbers, even up until under 18 nationally. So most of the work's really done by the academies and the schools. They would recommend players. We would have some contact time with them around skills clinics or some of the camps where they would nominate players, and then we would just kind of be observing lots and lots of games. And it's a really interesting challenge. John Fletcher, I work with, I think, does this brilliantly of looking at a player in one team and imagining him in another team, or imagining him in 3 years' time, or comparing him to George Ford when George Ford was 16. So I think I'm fortunate I work with John Fletcher and Peter Walton, who are real experts in this area. So I definitely can't claim to be one. I'm learning every day. And we've got some really good people in the academies as well. So I think that we're really focused on the kids. I don't think there'd be many coaches that wouldn't be just about helping the kids get better. And so I think certainly in the 2 years I've been involved with the A-teams, the quality of conversation around supporting kids and helping them get better has just improved. So I actually think it's relatively easy just because of the quality of people in the environment.
Mm, yeah. So you start with that big group, and then eventually, unfortunately, you've got to cut some kids, and, you know, they're just not there at that point in time. What were some of the key metrics there that you, well, not metrics, but, you know, some of the key areas you're looking for there?
Yeah, and we would, I mean, pre-Christmas, we'd probably see certainly, you know, about 80 kids, and that would get narrowed down, and we'd just go into the competition. So we'll go into Wales tomorrow with probably just shy of 30 players. And I think you're right. It is not at that time. So there may be players that this isn't the right for them because some kids have played a lot. So we've had some guys that have played up and played in the under 20s. So they actually need to go and concentrate on their schoolwork because they've got some important exams at the end of the year. Mm. There'll be some kids that might not be physically quite ready for it. So we play Canada under 19s, which would be pretty good for a physical test for our kids. There might be some kids. However, what I would say is if we have kids that aren't necessarily the best player now, and we think they have really high potential, then we would be more inclined to go with that kid than the kid that's, you know, the best kid now. We would be looking, well, where do we think this kid's going to get to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must be a tricky balancing act for sure. So at a U18 camp, what's that kind of look like on a day to day level? Like you mentioned, a lot of games. Like how much focus is on games opposed to, say, skill evaluation in isolation, or, you know, looking at structure and all those kind of things? I'm imagining not much in the latter.
Yeah, I mean, much more games, much more around, you know, what are the strengths of, so what's Andrew good at? You know, how would, if he had the ball, how would you best support him? Okay, what's, you know, how's Rusty like to defend? Okay, well, how might you? So much more conversations around that than, okay, well, we're going to play this system.
Mm-hmm.
I think the goal is that we have players that at the end of the, and this would be the same for the majority of academies, that they would want players that could play any game.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some stage, the game will move on, and at some stage, coaches will move on, and we need players that can just fit into anything and can go, okay, yeah, I get that. That's pretty. John Fletcher often talks about when Carl Heyman came up to Newcastle, and he said it took him about 5 minutes to understand the defence. He was like, yeah, I'm cool with it. I'll just, you know. And Fletcher's like, wow, this guy's a tight head prop, and he's the best defender in the club. He said Carl Heyman was just thinking, well, what's the best way to get the ball back? I'm not thinking of standing here and, you know, I've got to do this. And it's something we've been playing around with. So I've been looking a bit at the defence, and it was interesting because we are, and we've all done it. So everyone, you know, guard, A, B, 9, leader. And I asked one of our props, I said, if you couldn't say whatever you call, what would you say? And he said, I would probably just tell people what I'm doing and which players I've got. And I'd probably point in front of me rather than up. And I was like, which one would you rather do? And he said, I'd rather do that. Mm. So we've taken away those calls and just tried to be a bit more fluid in our D.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's been really interesting. And then just set them some challenges around preventing two passes, around getting interceptions, around getting man and ball, and just letting the players kind of fill in the blanks again. So that's been interesting in terms of just, almost trying to destructure the defence a little bit as well. We're very systems-based in defence. And I would, my preference would be we'd be a bit more adaptable. We would be a bit less predictable in defence. So we'd been doing a little bit of the Italy stuff. So we've been doing a little bit of the, we call it Judas, where, tackle, no ruck.
Yeah.
And just getting the players to explore the possibilities.
Mm.
So, to see what they're, how far they can take the boundaries of what they are individually and collectively capable of. And, we'll get some bumps along the way. We played Wales last week in the valleys down at Ebervale and probably lost to them due to emotion. So that's a really good learning moment for our players and for us as coaches to go, okay, well, how could we better prepare them? So it's been really, it's been a cool week or so since that game, where as coaches, we've definitely been looking in the mirror going, okay, we could have done this. Okay, next time we'll do this. So I've really enjoyed that process as well.
Yeah, cool. I think, it sounds like you're removing a lot of the structures that have come into the game over the last kind of decade or so. And I think for a lot of coaches, that might create a little bit of anxiety. How would you what advice would you give to a coach who's kind of keen to explore this style of coaching and, taking some of the shackles off, so to speak?
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, look, it's just my context, so people have different contexts.
Mm.
If you're
that's important.
Coaching in the international rugby, you've got to win games at the weekend, so I completely get that that's a little bit harder to do in a short space of time. And it's just interesting to see how it evolved. So I was with England students today and they'd asked their players, what attacking shape do you guys use? And there was a list on the board and they all played, there's about five different ones. There was 1-3-3-1, 2-4-2, there was 4-4, there was, I actually think if we'd asked those kids 12 months ago, none of those shapes had even been invented. Mm. So, and often we're replicating other people. So I would, the fact that the Kiwis might play 1-3-3-1 or 2-4-2 is also based upon the fact they have Dane Coles and Kieran Reid, who are really effective in, wide
channels. Yeah.
So I would challenge people to think, well, what's the best for this group of players? And it was interesting with the students, guys, because they then said, okay, well, let's just be free and see what happens. And then they said, okay, after 2 days, they said, right, we've decided on 1-3-3-1. And so they said, right, so we'll play. So they started training 1-3-3-1 and just said, it was horrible. So we just went back to, okay, well, let's fill the field and what are your preferences and how can we bring the best out of you? And actually just conversations about, well, what are people really good at? What are their strengths? What got them in the team in the first place? And let's create a structure, framework, whatever language we want to use to help bring those strengths to life so that, we actually just want to see the best of people on a rugby pitch.
Yeah. No, that's great. And that's really good advice. And definitely, you're always tinkering when you're a coach and otherwise you should probably step aside. But I think it's some good ideas there that people can go off.
The light bulb moment for me was really when you start to watch, especially guys with low numbers, in phase play, where they're looking. And they are generally looking either at the ball, at the ruck, or they're looking at players around them so that they can organise themselves. And they're just not looking in front of them, which is where you get all your answers. So I would urge coaches just to look at the players they've put into positions and look where they're looking, because they're often not looking in the right place.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, great. So you're still, so it's a developmental program, obviously, the U18 England side. And, you had a loss against Wales and a win earlier against Scotland. How do you measure success, or how do you and the coaching team measure success other than the scoreboard? What are some of the key areas you're kind of looking at?
It is about learning, which is obviously really difficult to measure. We don't have a standardised test in rugby. All our games would have different contexts, so it's really difficult to compare information from, you know, from playing France to playing Scotland to playing Wales. Mm-hmm. And we would try and look at individually really about players and how they're progressing. They would have individual development plans that we would, you know, the game would be an opportunity for them to keep improving that. And we would, over the end of the games, probably with them, try and bring to life, you know, where they've improved, maybe connect that up with some of the stuff they've been doing in training and on and off the pitch, and then, you know, what they've actually put onto the pitch. So, I mean, we would reference the fact that you only really see learning in the game. So what are the things we can pull out of the game that they've got better at, that we've seen them learn? So it would be predominantly that. Alongside that, we'd have some fairly big picture metrics that we would look at. So we would want to, in attack, we would look at, are we playing to space? That would be our main objective. And PJ Butler is at Gosforth Ace beautifully said, there's space all over the pitch. There's just more space in some places than others. Mm. And so I think often people go, oh, but there's no space. Well, it might be in between two defenders. Mm-hmm. It might be just over the top. So we're always trying to get them to think, well, how can we get the ball forward? Where's the space? And alongside that, we're also interested in, we're curious about some of the things like, you know, passing in contact, like lifting off the floor, things that we just think are going to become more and more important and as the game moves on. And then defensively, we're looking at trying to keep passes from the opposition to as few as possible. So ideally, maximum kind of two pass plays. Mm-hmm. And then we got some other stuff that sits around that as well.
All right. And just before we wrap up the interview, you facilitate an online kind of learning site, sharing site for coaches called the Magic Academy. You mentioned it earlier. It's on Edufy. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and if coaches wanted to get in contact with you about that, how they go about it?
Yeah, well, I think it was something we were talking about for a while, and me and Kaz Morgan, who's now first team analyst, who was analyst with the 18s, set it up. Actually, Kaz set it up, because Kaz is the one who understands computers and I don't. We just started. It's basically just anytime we bump into a coach, we might say, oh, do you want to join the Magic? Do you want to join this? It's a sharing site. And I actually envisaged that it would be lots and lots of me putting lots and lots of stuff on. Whilst I do put stuff on, I'm actually been a little bit blown away by how much stuff other people have put on. And it's actually been an awesome learning tool for me. So we're up to about 450 coaches now. There would be coaches from multiple sports. There's people from business. There's guys that coach on a Sunday morning. There's males. There's females. There's people that coach at the Premiership. There's people that coach in the top 14. There's academy coaches. There's school coaches. There's people from football. There's a guy from British shooting. There's someone from British canoeing. It's just kind of, it's got out of hand is what's happened.
That's great.
It's got massively out of hand. And as my wife said, oh my God, are you on that bloody site again?
Yeah.
So,
it's a great time waster, I tell you.
Yeah, I know. So, and actually off the back of it, so we're having our first Magic Academy meet. So Keith Lyons, who's a wonderful guy who lives in Australia, who's a Welsh. He was originally analyst with the Welsh rugby team, and he's just this brilliant guy. So Keith's coming over. He does some work with coaches in the UK through the RFU, and he's coming over in April, and I think it's something like April the 18th or the 20th. We're having our first Magic Academy unmeeting in Bristol near my house, so I can skateboard to it. it'd be interesting. I'm just, you know, let's see where it goes.
That's great.
I'm pretty blown away by, because I will now meet people, or I'll have probably three or four emails today of people just going, oh, could you add me to it? I've heard good stuff about it. Or, you know, or I was in the lunch queue the other day at the RFU and someone said, oh, could you add me to this? Someone's told me about it. So, it's pretty exciting, really.
Awesome. And if people wanted to reach out to you, what's a good contact email address for you?
Yeah, so just my name. So Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, Earnshaw at rfu.com. And yeah, I'm happy to invite people onto it.
All right, perfect. Well, we always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up and falling in love with the game, who was one of the players that jumped out at you that you really liked watching?
I've got two, really. So I've got, only because I had that, a really old Australian top. So I had David Campese.
Yeah. Total legend.
Yeah. And I think the top was bought so I would grow into it in 10 years' time. So it's fairly baggy. Yeah. And I used to always want to – I used to practice carrying the ball like he used to. So he'd hold the end of the ball in his hand and have the other end in his elbow joint.
Yeah, yeah.
Practice that loads. And the other person was Zinzan Brook, really. And when he came over, I was actually picked to play – they were playing two teams against England in the build-up to the 1999 World Cup, and they were the original back row was going to be of this team in the South was going to be me, Zinzan Brook, and Francois Pienaar. Oh. Well, they both pulled out, and I broke my arm, so all my dreams were crushed because that would have been pretty cool. I mean, it just I probably was a frustrated back.
Cool. And what about now? Who do you like watch running around?
From an English point of view, I think Owen Farrell's is doing spectacular stuff. I love his competitive edge as well. I mean, he is just driving other people to be better. Globally, I love Ben Smith. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that he went to Colston School as a gap year and he played for Old Colstonians. And he was apparently about 12 stone dripping wet. And yet, you know, he's now just this rock star player we played against him a bit on the Seven Circuit. So he was out in Delhi at the Commonwealth. And he just a beautiful player to watch. And I do like the fact that him and Farrell, really, it's a big man's game often, but it's often the little fellas that are the guys that are doing all the cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the beauty of rugby too. There will always be place for all body sizes and shapes, you know. And what about coaches? Who are some of the coaches that you really admire and look up to?
Yeah, I've been kind of, lots of coaches, really. I mean, I often talk about Tony Rogers, who's at Cambridge when I was there. Mm-hmm. I was often say that Todgers was so obsessed with the making sure he had the golf ball and the peg for the drinking games afterwards that he was just allowing us to coach ourselves and self-organize. Mm. So Todgers was just brilliant. We were, you know, just having the time of our lives, creating amazing memories, beat Samoa, beat Queensland, you know, just had so much fun. And yet, you know, he just facilitated it either deliberately or not. I'm not quite sure. he would really be a highlight, to be honest.
All right, cool. And what about some people chipping away in the grassroots that are doing really good work in your local area?
I'll definitely get in trouble for mentioning individuals. So,
you can generalize if you want, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, throughout the pathway, I just think some of the academy coaches are doing some unbelievable stuff. Now, they possibly don't get the recognition of the guys at the top, or they don't have the names. However, it's always, I mean, I'm often asking kids, who's your favorite teacher? Who's your favorite coach? Why are they your favorite teacher? Why? And I will definitely pass that information on to those coaches because it's pretty powerful when you're having such an amazing impact on, and they're not, you know, the kids aren't talking about necessarily even the rugby, just how inspirational some of the young up and coming coaches are. So there's a lot of there's a lot of cool stuff going on. I can mention, so Sunday morning is my favorite half day of the week because I coach Old Bristolians under 13. So right. Coach with Rob and Paul Tinkler, who was my head boy at school. And they are rocking it in terms of just positive attitude. So Sunday mornings can often be quite stressful as we play against teams that are obsessed with winning and telling players to play certain positions and giving them all the answers from the sideline. And I think we're doing some really fun stuff. I mean, you can measure Tinks's impact just from the number of kids we have. I mean, it's, we're just growing and growing and growing, and you know, lots of kids that were either on benches at other clubs or lacked confidence, or you know, and we and Tinks is just like this magic man who can, you know, just talk to the kids like no one else can. So I'll be pleased to give him a shout out. He's doing some pretty cool stuff.
All right, well, that's awesome, Russell, and I really appreciate you coming on the show, and just want to thank you for giving up your time. It's given coaches so much to think about, and you know, definitely got a few things bouncing around in my head as well from the chat. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it, and just thanks very much for giving up your time.
Cheers, mate. No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yep, no worries. All right, cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better. Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at RugbyCoachSCNR or via the website at therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.